Not to be outdone by a number of states showing their institutional discrimination, a U.S. Senate committee approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage after a shouting match that ended when one Democrat walked out and the Republican chairman bade him good riddance. U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, shouted at Senator Russ Feingold, quote, "I don't need to be lectured by you. You are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I," end quote. Specter, Republican from Pennsylvania, shouted this at Feingold after Feingold declared his opposition to the amendment, his affinity for the Constitution, and his intention to leave the meeting. Not to be outdone by Feingold, Specter told him, quote, "If you want to leave, good riddance," end quote. Feingold then replied with, quote, "I've enjoyed your lecture too, Mr. Chairman. See ya," end quote. A former Republican National Committee official was sentenced Wednesday to 10 months in prison for his role in the jamming of New Hampshire Democrats' telephones on Election Day 2002. Prosecutors said James Tobin helped arrange more than 800 hang-up calls that jammed get-out-the-vote phone lines set up by State Democratic Party and the Manchester Firefighters Union for about an hour. Republican John Sununu defeated then-Governor Gene Shaheen for the Senate that day in what had been considered a cliffhanger. Republican Congressman James Sensenbrenner, who pushed a tough border security bill through the House last December, accused George Bush on Wednesday of abandoning the legislation after asking for many of its provisions. Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin, angrily told reporters in a conference call, quote, "He basically turned his back on provisions of the House-passed bill, a lot of which we were requested to put in the bill by the White House," end quote. This lends credibility to speculation that the immigration issue and huge demonstrations were in large part manufactured by the administration to distract from other issues where Bush is taking hits. A new congressional report indicates phone companies may be liable over call records affected by the illegal NSA domestic spying. In the report, the Congressional Research Service identified the various statutes that would apply to the matter, concluding that these laws may, quote, "expose the telephone companies to some civil remedies or criminal sanctions," end quote. The report also noted, quote, "A request not founded upon a statutory scheme would appear to lack a means of compelling production of the information requested," end quote. Congressman John Conyers, who released the report, said, quote, "Given this analysis, it is clear that we as a Congress need to step up and investigate these very serious charges," end quote. You're listening to News from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Richard Armitage, former aide to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, is now apparently a target in the CIA leak investigation. Steve Clemens, editor of the popular foreign relations blog The Washington Note, revealed Thursday that former NSA chief Bobby Ray Inman has repeatedly said former Undersecretary of State Richard Armitage is a target of the investigation into the outing of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson. While saying he has no knowledge of the veracity of Inman's claim, Clemens notes that the nation's top spy chief might be privy to insider information. The BBC is now reporting that Iran's capability to create a nuclear weapon is in great doubt due to the amount of enriched nuclear material they presently have. As was reported here on the Head-On Radio Network several weeks ago, the BBC now concurs with the assessment that was brought forth by Hans Blix and by Scott Ritter that Iran's natural uranium is not capable of being made into nuclear material anytime soon because it also contains molybdenum, and that material must be removed to enrich the uranium. The material Iran used to enrich was from China and was a limited amount that was acquired before China signed onto the Non-Proliferation Treaty. 17 years after it was withdrawn from U.S. markets, a synthetic version of the active ingredient in marijuana is going back on sale as a prescription treatment for the vomiting and the nausea that often accompanies chemotherapy, its manufacturer said Thursday. Valeant, Pharmaceuticals International hopes to begin selling Sisamet in the next 2 to 3 weeks, company president Wes Wheeler said. Former Vice President Al Gore canceled a planned appearance at University of California, Berkeley, after local members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees threatened to picket. Gore was to speak Tuesday evening on the emerging threat of global warming at a China-U.S. climate change forum co-sponsored by Peking University and University of California, Berkeley. The rest of the program, slated for Tuesday and Wednesday, continued as scheduled. The workers are protesting what they describe as poverty wages and a UC proposal requiring employees to pay up to 8% of their salary toward their pensions. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it. So call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, hey, good day. I am Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. It's Thursday. And being Thursday, well, we're near the end of the week, but still an abundance of time for us to cuss and discuss the things that really matter in our nation, in our world. And the obvious story today is Michael Hayden's little lie fest on Capitol Hill. And there, you know, you might want to take a look at some of the angles that flow from that. But I want to back up, if I may, please. I want to back up to Monday. I had mentioned this last night and didn't get to it, and I think this bears a hard look. Because it didn't get the reportage that it deserved, and yet what we got Monday was the true nature of this hateful fascist Supreme Court, as led on Monday by John Roberts, and then we'll follow up with a story of some arguments that also went down recently in a case that was aimed squarely at Sammy Badbreath, Sammy Alito. You know, that guy that doesn't like girls going to Princeton. And it does not spell smooth sailing ahead for the Bill of Rights. But most importantly, Monday, a decision came down. Came down from the Supreme Court. It's a little bit convoluted. It's a little bit complicated, but it's worth your attention. It was a unanimous decision, mind you. 9-0, okay? That means, you know, those liberal judges, we've been over that ground. There are no liberal Supreme Court judges. None. They are all as dedicated to the status quo and as prone to walk lockstep in line like little ducks behind their mama. Every last one of them. I mean, David Sirota at Working for Change, and I hope you don't mind some of these legal stories because they really do matter. Some of the background of this, if you really want to get intensely educated on the issue that surrounded this, there's a book out there by a very brilliant author by the name of Greg Leroy, L-E-R-O-Y, called the Great American Jobs Scam. And he taught, and you know, you've seen it, let's see, Chrysler says it will build a new plant, and three states are in the running, Indiana, Tennessee, and Idaho. All right? Well, of course, the company already knows where it's going to go. It's known since the moment that it set out to build the plant. But what it does is it drives state governments into a race to the bottom to find out how much of the treasury each state is willing to give away, and they bid each other into financial ruin. It's been seen in state after state after state. Finally, someone challenged that. And that challenge came in the state of Ohio. What it boils down to is 2 years ago, the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals struck down, said, nope, can't do this. They struck down Ohio's tax credit for new equipment. They said that the practice impedes interstate commerce because the way Ohio set the law up, the incentives were available only to businesses that invest in Ohio. And there's your race to the bottom. States and cities, you know, at each other's throats for a new plant. In particular, in Ohio, they used the tax credit to give away Daimler Chrysler about $300 million in taxpayer dollars. You know, stuff that goes for, oh, I don't know, roads, ambulance services, schools. In the case of the Chrysler giveaway, Toledo, Ohio had to close 9 schools. They had to fire 380 school workers so that they could give away $300 million to Daimler Chrysler. All right? Well, the U.S. Supreme Court came out, and I guess we should kind of look at this in a cool and dispassionate fashion, because, you know, after all, I can't be out there name calling. No, we're dealing with SOBs here. I'll go ahead and name call. Chief Justice John Roberts wrote the unanimous opinion. That's, you know, oh God, unanimous. And this is what he said. This is a quote from the opinion. Just sort of let this thing do the roulette wheel marble thing on the inside of your skull and see if it doesn't make you a little bit angrier every time it makes a circuit. This is what John Roberts said. State taxpayers, oh wait, let's do it in the Thurston Howell voice because that's how he thinks. State taxpayers have no standing to challenge state tax or spending decisions simply by virtue of their status as taxpayers. That is black letter law in America now. You got that? You pay the bills. You pay the taxes. But even though you're a citizen, you know, you're not one of those illegals. You were born here. You pay your taxes. You obey the laws. You get up, you go to work, you do everything that's required of you. In point of fact, as an American worker, you work harder, you work longer hours, less pay, less benefits than any other so-called civilized or advanced nation on this planet. And Chief Justice John Roberts, as of Monday, speaking for a unanimous Supreme Court, said that the 6th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals was wrong, because the 6th Circuit U.S. Court of Appeals ruled that the taxpayers had a right to bring a lawsuit to stop this kind of giveaway of the Treasury to corporate America. And, you know, Daimler Chrysler, okay, corporate Germany. All right? Hear that again. State taxpayers have no standing to challenge state tax or spending decisions simply by virtue of their status as taxpayers. No, they need to be something special. They need to be a corporation, I suppose. And this is going to have rippling effects all across the country. There's a case pending in North Carolina where taxpayers sued because North Carolina gave away $242 million to Dell Computer. With one stroke of a pen and nine little autographs, North Carolina taxpayers just got robbed of $242 million that could have gone for roads or schools or sanitation or a new water system or any of the things that we used to think that civilized society was based on. In West Virginia, we gave a big tax giveaway to Cabela's to build a Cabela's superstore with lots of camouflage clothing and boats and they had a wildlife stuffed dead animal display and fish tanks, really big fish tanks with really big fish in them. And they said, "Oh boy, if you give us this tax credit, we're gonna, you know, we're not just gonna let anybody come in here on this night to partner with us in our business. Now, this is gonna be really high end shopping. Guess what else is going in? Say it with me. 1, 2, 3. Walmart. Now, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? Every time the courthouse door gets shut to any American, we become a little less free. You can't sue. The simple fact of your being a taxpayer does not give you the right to complain when politicians, bought and paid for by corporate America, give away your hard-earned money. You remember all that crap about, it's your money, we're going to give you back your money. Horse hockey, they're not giving you back your money. Oh, you got, you know, somebody got a check for $100, $300, $500. Turned out to be an advance. It wasn't even a give back. It wasn't even a tax cut. It was an advance. Screw your money. It's not your money. It's Daimler Chrysler's. It's Dell Computers. It's Walmart's. And it's there for corrupt Republicans, give away to the highest corporate bidder. What? I get to go golfing in Scotland? That's just sad. Oh, I know. They're listening to our phone calls. I know. They're making wars we don't want made. Closer to home, they're bankrupt. Toledo, Ohio had to fire 380 school workers for Daimler Chrysler to build a plant that they were going to build anyway. Okay? And that's just the beginning. But the story has been laying around for a few days, and I wanted to make sure it got out there because I saw next to no mention of this whatsoever. In 1977, according to USA Today, in 1977, nine states gave tax credits to corporations by 21 years later, 36 states were doing it. Meanwhile, in that same time frame, also according to the USA Today article, individual income taxes are growing at a faster rate than corporate income taxes. Because in the long run, you know, you individuals, you non-corporate individuals, you mortal U.S. citizens, as opposed to the immortal U.S. citizens, not to mention moral, you pay the corporations to have a free ride. And then the corporations don't even pay taxes worth noting. So there you have it. And I expect it of John Roberts, and I expect it of Fat Tony Scalia and Slappy Thomas. I expect it of Sammy Bad Breath. I expect it of Anthony Kennedy. Ruth Bader Ginsburg? That woman that the right wingers would like to crucify? Because she's such a liberal. You know, she worked for the AC. She ain't so liberal. Being a taxpayer does not give you the right to go to court. We'll be back. You know the phone number. 877-443-2366. 877, the number 4. Head on. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
A new computer. Congratulations.
Thanks. It's the coolest thing.
What'll you do with your old computer?
I don't know. I guess I'll just throw it away.
Well, my company just bought new computers, and we decided to donate the old PCs to a place that gives them to local schools. You could do something like that.
Seriously, who would want a 3-year-old computer?
Hey, it might be great for someone else. Computers can be refurbished and reused instead of ending up in the trash. By passing it on, you can help the community and the environment.
If you're replacing your company's IT equipment or you're finished using your personal computer, pass it on to a local organization that accepts computers. To learn more, log on to epa.gov/passiton. This message was brought to you by EPA, Dell, Intel, HP, NEC, Philips, and this radio station on behalf of EPA's Plug Into eCycling Partnership. EPA does not endorse any commercial services or products of these groups. For information on all partners, log on to epa.gov/plugin.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine. With my Progressive Point of View, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website over at progressive.org, every hearing, every vote, is a yardstick for measuring the spine of our elected representatives. And the hearing and the vote on Michael Hayden to be CIA director is one of the more important measurements. Even before the hearing, senators were saying that Hayden was going to easily receive confirmation. When I heard that, I just couldn't believe it. Here's a guy who engineered the NSA spying program on U.S. citizens without a warrant in direct violation of the FISA law, which says the exclusive means by which the government can spy on U.S. citizens here is with a warrant. Here's a guy who then hooked up this enormous database of the phone calls of some 200 million Americans with help from Verizon, AT&T, and Bell South. And here's a guy who failed to properly consult with Congress about these very activities. So why he deserves kid gloves at the confirmation hearing is beyond me. And it's beyond me why he deserves to be confirmed at all. Watch the vote. See who has the spine to say no, not only to Michael Hayden, but to illegal spying and to Bush's daily exercise of lawless power. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
All right, welcome back. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Thursday night. Listen, I didn't mean to start on a low note, but everything doesn't have to be screamed. Okay, I think we understand that. This is kind of a cool and dispassionate case, and it's one that ought to make your hair curl and your blood boil. Let's go to the phones. We've got a call from Japan. Robert calling in. Hey, Robert, you're Head On. Thanks for calling the program.
Well, thank you. It's quite an honor to talk to you finally.
It's a real pleasure for me as well.
So, I just wanted to chit-chat about the concept of politics and culture as well, because what we're talking about is just they're not only shaping the political scene, but also the cultural scene, too.
Certainly. I think they go hand in hand, don't they?
Oh, yeah. I mean, come over to Japan. You can see how the conservative movement would be advanced, say, 20 or 30 years from here. And people, well, they're just so brainwashed to think that they can't even, form an opinion. And they're just the puppets of the corporations. So
now, by definition, though, to be fair, Robert, depending on what kind of a definition of the word you use, Japan has always been a fairly conservative culture, has it not?
Oh, yes, of course. And that's been one of the problems. It would have been much more advanced if it hadn't been. Yeah, I mean, I look at the advancement of Japan, but I also see the price they paid for it. I mean, people work 16 hours. They have a job for life, but they work 16 hours a day, almost 6 days a week to do it. And the divorce rate here is now going skyrocketing because the women are no longer saying, I'm going to put up with it anymore.
Well, I saw a story, and you've probably seen this as well. One of our listeners emailed me a story from Asia Times that referenced a new statute going into effect or being contemplated by the Diet in Japan that basically codifies thought crimes. Are you familiar with that?
Oh, yes. I just read that 2 days ago in Japan Times that it's a conspiracy law that if you were in the same room and you overheard someone or you didn't overhear someone, you could be charged with a crime. And this is going back to the pre-war, you know, World War II days of, well, you know, we may want to jail you just because we think that you may have committed a crime. So, and then now they're also taking out books of the library. I noticed up in Fukui-ken, they took out some books that they just didn't like. And there was no murmur. There's no discussion about it. And there's no real community to really get upset about it because everyone's too busy working. So.
Well, I suppose that's one way to keep down dissent is just make people too desperate to dare to do so. But it's been my understanding from talking to some other folks over on the Pacific Rim that there's a real undercurrent of distaste for American policy. Do you sense that?
Oh yeah, I mean Fox. We had Fox News here for on the Sky Perfect channel for maybe a few. Maybe a year or so, but then it just went bankrupt because nobody just bought into it. But you see, this is the thing. I mean, the people opposed the Japanese troops going to Iraq. I think it was like 80%, but they just went ahead and did it anyway. So pretty much like in the States, you have a lot of people opposing the situation, but they just go ahead and do it anyway. So
do you ever see anything in Japan along the lines of a significant out in the streets protest?
No, because everyone's busy, too busy working. I live over in Western Japan, but, how can you have time to protest when, A, you don't have time, you come home at 9 o'clock, if you're lucky, at 9 o'clock, and you got to make dinner and cook everything. Most people come home at 12 o'clock at night. So you can imagine you have maybe time for a beer, and you've got to get up, go to bed, get 6 hours sleep, which most people do, and so you don't have time or energy to protest. And that's the whole concept of the culture thing, is that you get everyone working so hard and too busy to even think about what's going on.
Well, does that apply across the board, Robert? I mean, are the upper echelons working like that too, or are we talking mainly about the so-called middle class and lower middle class?
I'm sure the upper class, they probably hang around their office just to make sure that their slaves are still there, you know. But they have a much better life. You know, they can go drinking and all. But, I think everybody here suffers, basically. And there's this idea that Japan is really such a beautiful, place to live. I mean, I'm probably one of the few people, seriously, that comes home at 5 o'clock and has the decent life. My Japanese teacher tells me you have a dream life. You know, I can't imagine what you do. But for the rest of us, I mean, the rest of the people, it's just a miserable hellhole.
That's so stark, and frankly, it's very disappointing for me to hear, Robert, because in my studies as an undergraduate, I had a lot of exposure to Japanese culture and Japanese poetry and Japanese literature, and somehow or another, I thought it was different. That's a real eye opener for me. But it's been this way for quite some time, hasn't it?
Oh yeah, I mean, ever since that's how they climbed out of their abysses. They did work their butt off, but it came at a very high price. I mean, the marriages today, I mean, I would say by and far just shams because, they get together, they don't know what love is because they don't know who they are. They haven't had no time to reflect. They get married and they work and, it's called a Narita divorce. There's one is they, go for the honeymoon, they go back and go, oh my God, I realize who this person is, and they get divorced. There are people, major divorces now, and when they get retired, the wife goes, oh God, he's going to be here all the time. And they divorce, and once the guy retires. But that's the problem. I mean, yeah, it's very sad. But that's the way the corporations like it. But the biggest problem is, my barber was telling me, is that they're firing everybody when they're like 52 years old. Because, well, they've been here too long, and we could hire someone cheaper, and so that's what they do. By fire, you mean
no benefits, no pension, see you later, best of luck.
They give the pension out one drop, you know, so like maybe 10,000, 20,000, whatever it is, and then it lasts maybe 3 or 4 years, and once that's up, you're living in a cardboard box. And then you're jumping. Because you can't get hired because, well, you're specialized in this. And I had a friend of mine in the same boat. And you can't get another job. So, and there's no representation for these people. So, I mean, there's a funny story about this. I mean, or not a funny, but a sad story. But they did this to this one Hiroshima baker, did this to his workers. And they hired a bunch of these young people. And one of the young ones came with this necklaces. And the manager told her to take the necklace off. And she refused. And then during the course of the day, the necklace fell off into one of the loaves of bread. And so they had to go back and get every loaf of bread for the entire city of Hiroshima to find out where that necklace was so nobody would choke on it. So that's the cost of firing experienced workers. And they've done that with JR and, you know, the Japan Railroad. They got rid of the workers and they hired new ones, and they're having accidents at the wazoo.
Well, in light of the fact that, the late 70s, early 80s, all you heard out of the corporate culture in the United States was, you know, we have to study the Japanese management model. Is this what we can expect in 20 years in the United States?
That's what you're going to be expecting. It's going to be just worse and worse. And the other concept, we should study the educational model. Now, I'm a teacher, and I know about the education model here, and it's just an absolute mess. It's factory education. You know, ring the bell, sit down, be quiet, memorize as much as you can, and that's about it.
Now, see, that runs contrary to what we get over here, too, Robert.
Yeah, see, it gets worse than that. I mean, up in Fukui, where I used to live, there was no heating in the schools. So the kids would have to hold bags and beans of bags to keep their hands warm, to stay warm.
Well, I think that's probably where we're going, too, because, how long have you been gone from the U.S.?
About 12 years now.
Okay, well, I happen to, you know, I'm down here in Alabama right now, away from the studio, trying to help with my dad a little bit. And I happened upon an interview with George Wallace Jr. the other night, and I'm sure you remember his daddy.
Man. Oh, yeah.
And he had been state treasurer of Alabama, and they asked him, he used to be a Democrat, and then he switched over and became a Republican, and the guy who was interviewing him asked him why, and he said, well, I think that I think the Democratic liberal culture of the Northeast began to infect conservative Alabama Democratic Party to where they thought that they began to adopt that tax and spend mentality that all you got to do to solve a problem is throw money at it. Now, the opposite of that is, Alabama went into proration with its public education system a couple of years back. And the opposite of that is, well, if we just starve the system enough,
right,
we'll have the education system that we want. And you talk about children going to school in schools with no heat or, you know, in hotter climates of the United States. How about no air conditioning?
Oh, no air conditioning in my schools, yeah. I mean, even in the different factories from where my part-time teachers work at, you know, they keep the air conditioning almost off. I mean, they end up sweating, the workers tell me, and, you know, and they're just about to die. Like Toto, which is one of the biggest toilet factories, you know, he was just saying, Jesus, it's so counterproductive because, yes, you save a little money on electricity, but all the employers are just about to die. So, but that's the whole mentality. It's a cheap, stupid, dirty, let's penny pinch and let's just say everyone suffer. And,
well, is there any kind of a progressive movement there, Robert?
Not really. I mean, and this is what—that's the sad thing about it. I mean, there was one, I think, mayor up in Nagano that was that caught my eye, and he actually had some ideas. You know, he's the one that stopped all the dams being built up there. Because they had endless building dams. There's a creek, there's a trickle. We'll build a dam there. And he was the one he's the only politician I've seen in this whole country that had any kind of real progressive mentality at all.
So, because the politicians come out of the corporate culture too, right?
Exactly right. But this is the corporate culture, let's say, 10 more years advanced of what you are. You heard the Hot Chili Peppers song, Californication, and they talked about, the society in California. They should have one of Japan, because, come on over here and you'll see where the Republican Party's going to be taking you in about 20 years. And it ain't pretty. It ain't pretty.
And
you're going to be jumping.
No, you paint a rather bleak and terrifying picture. And yet, there sits the Japanese home islands not too far off the Asian mainland, and they're is it driven by terror of the looming Chinese giant? Is that part of it? Robert, I hate to say it, but I think the satellite's moved out of position because we just lost your transmission in a big way. I hope we'll get a chance to talk again soon. I love the perspective, and I love the little wake up call that you've provided here. So please, if it's possible, I hope you'll call in again, and I hope we can carry this conversation further. Thanks a lot, Robert. Our new friend Robert calling from Japan. And frankly, I don't think it's too much of a stretch for me to suggest that what he was covering works hand in glove with what I opened the program with. And it's something that I have said, it's something I've said in the past about the United States. I said that, why in heaven's name, aren't there a couple, there are tens of millions of progressives and liberals in this country. Why have we not surrounded the White House and the Capitol? Why have we not surrounded the White House and demanded the peaceful, orderly transition of power from this megalomaniacal little madman? Who lives there right now? Why haven't we done it? We can't. Because if we do, we'll lose our job. And the kids will go hungry. And the bank will take the car back. The bank will take the house back. It's all the same thing. It really, really is. And Robert's right, a few more years of good old-fashioned republicanism, and we get to be, we reach a level of wage slavery we probably haven't seen for 150, 200 years in this country. When we come back, your phone calls, more than welcome. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid, worldwide conversation radio host on the Head On Radio Network.
This is Lee Hamilton.
And Ron Saracen of the U.S. Capitol Historical Society.
Our Capitol has hosted some of the great debates of our history.
And we're both proud to have served here.
But there is no guarantee that representative democracy will simply continue on.
We all need to ask ourselves whether we're doing our part as citizens.
Staying informed, engaging elected officials, and being active in our communities.
It's our history.
And it's also our future.
Get involved.
While it's not on the front page, the genocide in Darfur, Western Sudan continues. Rapes and other physical attacks still occur regularly, and large-scale food shortages may be just around the corner. But there is something you can do to make sure the U.S. government takes action to end this nightmare. Over 1,000 people have made the pledge to call or email the White House every weekday until President Bush ensures the deployment of 44,000 peacekeeping troops in Darfur. Give a voice to your conscience. Visit DarfurPledge.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, the editor of the Progressive magazine, with my progressive point of view, which you can now grab as a podcast or download off our website at progressive.org. If I were Helen Thomas, I'd sure watch out, because now the White House is tapping the phones of reporters. At least that's what Brian Ross and Richard Esposito of ABC News have revealed. One of their sources, a senior federal official, gave them the heads up. It's time for you to get some new cell phones quick, the source told them, in person. And the source was there in person, it's reasonable to assume, so as to avoid detection from Big Brother. No word yet whether the source said, follow the money. Ross and Esposito say that reporters from the New York Times and the Washington Post are also having their calls monitored. This Nixonian behavior is not all that surprising, I guess, but it is chilling nonetheless. And that's the temperature the White House prefers. Rather than deny the story or not comment on it at all, the FBI subsequently told Ross and Esposito that it's just taking logical investigative steps in leak cases. Well, it's logical for this White House to intimidate the press, because Bush wants reporters to fear that they're being watched and tapped and followed, as if most of them weren't cowed enough already. I'm Matt Rothschild, and that's how I see it.
I never knew that everything was falling through, that everyone I knew was waiting on a cue to turn and run when all I needed was the truth. But that's how it's gotta be. It's coming down to nothing more than apathy. I'd rather run the other way than stay and see.
Being here tonight. I mean that with all my heart. I fear that I got the show off to a rather slow start, and I apologize for that. In terms of taxpayer rights being more or less spit on by 9 members of this. I'll tell you the truth. We did some doctoring today. Rule 1 for all itinerant talk hosts out there. Do not eat a great big honkin' sandwich before the show starts. It's like, I don't know, sleeping gas from a Batman, one of the old Batman TV. So that's what it was, I apologize. But I'm all better now. I'm very sorry we lost the last of Robert's comments. I really do believe that no matter how hard we try, even, you know, even us smart people, us liberals, us progressives, because after all, Republicans generally hate people from other cultures and generally aren't much, but... What do you mean Japanese have an older culture than America? What are you, some communist? You know how it goes. But We don't get the straight skinny. I'm as guilty as anybody, and not really guilty, just uninformed. You know, I think of Australia, and I think of what's his name, Paul Hogan. Yeah, come on down, come and say g'day, and we'll put a shrimp on that babby for you. And you know, I listen to our good buddy and co-host John Fox, who lives down there, and nah, it ain't Oz. Not nearly as pretty and fun as what you might think it is. So, it's important when we get that extra perspective. It's important when we get the perspective that we get from our friend Andy when he calls in from Wales. It's important when we get phone calls and emails from literally all over the planet. It's not just this country that's hungry for a conversation. It's this world. Literally dying for people to sit down and talk, and not talk out of both sides of their mouths or not speak with forked tongue. Just converse. One human being to another. Proof that that's failing around here? In this country? Oh, yeah, sunshine. There was proof of that today. While the rest of us were paying attention to the Michael Hayden hearing, there was a little hearing going down in the Senate, another corner of the Senate, the Senate Judiciary Committee. You know that moderate Republican Arlen Specter from Pennsylvania, that moderate Republican. If you hear Flush Flimball talking about him, and you know, God, he's snickering up his sleeve when he does it. That you'd swear he was almost a card-carrying liberal. Well, no. When the lights aren't on and the cameras aren't necessarily rolling, although I'm sure they were, and I'd love to have the audio, Arlen Specter can prove himself just as nasty a panderer as anybody else in that Republican majority in the Senate, which, if there is a God and if it is in its heaven, there won't be one of much longer. Republican majority, that is. Now, the Associated Press is reporting, and I'll just read straight from it. A Senate committee approved... God, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this. I thought they were going to camp out on the damned fake immigration debate. But no, they've got one to resurrect here. A Senate committee approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage Thursday. After a shouting match that ended when one Democrat strode out and the Republican chairman bid him, quote-unquote, good riddance. Take notice, Democrats. Somebody's out there showing you what you need to be doing. Senator Russ Feingold declared his opposition to the amendment. He swore his affinity for the Constitution and his intention to leave the meeting. And these are the words of that moderate Republican, Arlen Specter. Remember, he cut his teeth shilling for Richard Nixon in the impeachment. I don't need to be lectured by you. You are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I. If you want to leave, good riddance. He said that. That nasty little punk. You know, we talked the other night about how Tony Snow broke down and cried about how, you know, what a life-changing experience it is to survive cancer. Horse hockey. Arlen Specter survived cancer, and he may very well be nastier now than he was before he got the bad news. I don't need to be lectured by you. You're no more a protector of the Constitution than am I. No, that's a lie, Arlen Specter. That's a lie, and you're a liar. Because Russ Feingold is trying to protect the Constitution. Russ Feingold put forward at least a motion for censure. of George W. Wiretap. And you said, oh, we're going to hold hearings. And the hearings came around, oh, that's okay, no big deal. Wiretap away, baby. Gone. Thank you very much. That's your moderate Republican, Arlen Specter. Does a moderate Republican, you know, does a moderate Republican say that the Constitution only applies to heterosexuals? Does a moderate Republican say that the Constitution provides equal protection under law only for people who do it the way he thinks they ought to be doing it? Does a moderate... Please, you know this already. There is no such thing as a moderate Republican. Okay, here's where the little conservatives also say, he did it, he did it. That's like saying there's such a thing as a moderate Nazi. There are no moderate Nazis. There are no moderate Republicans. Parse that statement. I don't need to be lectured by you. You're no more a protector of the Constitution than am I. Little SOB. Arlen Specter just admitted that he won't protect the Constitution. You are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I. Come on, logic people. The gang that passed the formal logic class. Help me out here. Isn't there a tacit admission in there that Arlen Specter is not a protector of the Constitution? That man swore an oath to uphold it and to defend it. And there he is confessing that he has no more regard for his oath to protect and defend the Constitution than a hog has regard for a Sunday suit. Amid increasing partisan tension over President Bush's judicial nominees and domestic wiretapping, the panel voted along party lines to send the constitutional amendment, which would prohibit states from recognizing same-sex marriages, to the full Senate, where it stands little chance of passing. Why waste the time? Hell, Arlen Specter, that moderate Republican, unless I miss my guess, he was reelected in 2004. He has nothing to fear here. He can live up to, he can vote his conscience, he can vote his morals. But no, there he was, pandering, because that's all the Republican Party knows how to do, is pander. Democrats complained that bringing up the amendment is a purely political move designed to appeal to the GOP's conservative, knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing base in this year of midterm elections. Under the domed ceiling of the ornate and historic... Well, thank you, Lori Kelman. I didn't know it was ornate and domed. Historic President's Room off the Senate floor. The senators voted 10-8 to send the measure forward. Well, hey, at least the Democrats showed up for the hearing this time. That's a nice step forward. Among Feingold's objections was Specter's decision to hold the vote in the president's room where access by the general public is restricted instead of in the Senate panel's usual home in the Dirksen Senate office building. Can't have the public watching for that one because, you know, some of those uppity queers might come in with one of their signs and point out what a damn hypocrite Arlen Specter is. Because, you see, among other things, you know, Arlen Specter... had cancer, but if his spouse had it under his coverage, it would extend to the coverage would extend to the spouse. But that's not good enough, or that's too good, rather, for people who don't do it the way Arlen Specter thinks they ought to do it and with whom they ought to do it. And what's that old saying, a dog will always return to its vomit? Arlen Specter just did the same damn thing. And here, let me haul out another one for just a minute, just in case you'd forgotten. Who was the principal organization, among others, touting the Texas state constitutional amendment banning gay marriage? Anybody? Anybody? Hands up. The Klan? That's right. The Klan? Arlen Specter. 9 other members of the Senate Judiciary Committee, all of them Republicans, took the same position today. Oh my God. Took the same position today as the Klan. As the Klan. Well, that doesn't mean he's a Klansman, but... Quack, quack, walk, walk, flap, flap, swim, swim, duck! Specter, now get this. Specter said he is totally opposed to it. He's totally opposed to this amendment, but feels like it deserves debate in the full Senate. Horse hockey. If some other Republican introduced a measure, a constitutional amendment that would overturn the 13th, repeal the 13th Amendment, and Specter felt like he was entirely opposed to that, would he still pass it out of committee so that it could be, because it deserved debate on the floor of the full Senate? Would he do that? Here's what the amendment says. Marriage in the United States shall consist only of the union of a man and a woman. Neither this Constitution nor the Constitution of any state shall be construed to require that marriage or the legal incidents thereof be conferred upon any union other than the union of a man and a woman. Who's behind this kind of crap? Oh, how about that guy we talked about last night? The dumbest, the most ignorant, stupid, foolish man in the entire United States Senate. How about Jeff Sessions? But that's where we are in mid-May 2006 as the Republican Senate sees its power slip sliding away. That's where we are. Calling out every last ugly divisionary, mean-spirited, hateful, anti-human tactic that they can lay their grubby, greasy, blood-covered political mitts on. Bill Frist has scheduled a vote on the amendment for the week of June 5th. And, of course, I get the American Family Association action updates. Got one of those the other day. Tell your senator to vote against the homosexuals getting married because it'll make all us heterosexuals have to run out and get divorced. And this passes for policy? This passes for political theory in this nation? Remember the words, you are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I. Right, Senator Specter, you are no protector. This is Head On. Bob Kincaid, and this, in fact, is the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah.
Head-On Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. Not to be outdone by a number of states showing their institutional discrimination, a U.S. Senate committee approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage after a shouting match that ended when one Democrat walked out and the Republican chairman bade him good riddance. U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, shouted at Senator Russ Feingold, quote, "I don't need to be lectured by you. You are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I," end quote. Specter, Republican from Pennsylvania, shouted this at Feingold after Feingold declared his opposition to the amendment, his affinity for the Constitution, and his intention to leave the meeting. Not to be outdone by Feingold, Specter told him, quote, "If you want to leave, good riddance," end quote. Feingold then replied with, quote, "I've enjoyed your lecture too, Mr. Chairman. See ya," end quote. A former Republican National Committee official was sentenced Wednesday to 10 months in prison for his role in the jamming of New Hampshire Democrats' telephones on Election Day 2002. Prosecutors said James Tobin helped arrange more than 800 hang-up calls that jammed get-out-the-vote phone lines set up by State Democratic Party and the Manchester Firefighters Union for about an hour. Republican John Sununu defeated then-Governor Gene Shaheen for the Senate that day in what had been considered a cliffhanger. Republican Congressman James Sensenbrenner, who pushed a tough border security bill through the House last December, accused George Bush on Wednesday of abandoning the legislation after asking for many of its provisions. Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin, angrily told reporters in a conference call, quote, "He basically turned his back on provisions of the House-passed bill, a lot of which we were requested to put in the bill by the White House," end quote. This lends credibility to speculation that the immigration issue and huge demonstrations were in large part manufactured by the administration to distract from other issues where Bush is taking hits. A new congressional report indicates phone companies may be liable over call records affected by the illegal NSA domestic spying. In the report, the Congressional Research Service identified the various statutes that would apply to the matter, concluding that these laws may, quote, "expose the telephone companies to some civil remedies or criminal sanctions," end quote. The report also noted, quote, "a request not founded upon a statutory scheme would appear to lack a means of compelling production of the information requested," end quote. Congressman John Conyers, who released the report, said, quote, "Given this analysis, it is clear that we as a Congress need to step up and investigate these very serious charges," end quote. You're listening to News from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station in the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Richard Armitage, former aide to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, is now apparently a target in the CIA leak investigation. Steve Clemens, editor of the popular foreign relations blog The Washington Note, revealed Thursday that former NSA chief Bobby Ray Inman has repeatedly said former Undersecretary of State Richard Armitage is a target of the investigation into the outing of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson. While saying he has no knowledge of the veracity of Inman's claim, Clemens notes that the nation's top spy chief might be privy to insider information. The BBC is now reporting that Iran's capability to create a nuclear weapon is in great doubt due to the amount of enriched nuclear material they presently have. As was reported here on the Head-On Radio Network several weeks ago, the BBC now concurs with the assessment that was brought forth by Hans Blix and by Scott Ritter that Iran's natural uranium is not capable of being made into nuclear material anytime soon, because it also contains molybdenum, and that material must be removed to enrich the uranium. The material Iran used to enrich was from China and was a limited amount that was acquired before China signed onto the Non-Proliferation Treaty. 17 years after it was withdrawn from U.S. markets, a synthetic version of the active ingredient in marijuana is going back on sale as a prescription treatment for the vomiting and the nausea that often accompanies chemotherapy, its manufacturer said Thursday. Valeant Pharmaceuticals International hopes to begin selling Sisamet in the next 2 to 3 weeks, company president Wes Wheeler said. Former Vice President Al Gore canceled a planned appearance at University of California, Berkeley, after local members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees threatened to picket. Gore was to speak Tuesday evening on the emerging threat of global warming at a China-U.S. climate change forum co-sponsored by Peking University and University of California, Berkeley. The rest of the program, slated for Tuesday and Wednesday, continued as scheduled. The workers are protesting what they describe as poverty wages and a UC proposal requiring employees to pay up to 8% of their salary toward their pensions. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, so we'll do another hour. Like that's a surprise. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is our nightly little dust-up that we call Head On. You know, me, the Queen of England, and that little mouse in my pocket. Wee! So glad you could join us. By whatever means you choose to join us, whether it be live on the streams provided by Ben Birch, our close associate at WhiteRoseSociety.org, or whether you're listening in delay in the archives provided at WhiteRoseSociety.org or by podcast. You know, we've got podcasting set up there. Also, via the rebroadcast of the program and the listing on iTunes at RadioPower.org. Our many kind thoughts go out to our good friend Shelby LaPrey at Radio Power. I mention this from time to time because there are things that are worth doing and things that are worth supporting. RadioPower.org is one of those things. Shelby got just hammered with a lightning storm not too awfully long back that fried a bunch of equipment, and she's trying to replace it and get RadioPower.org back up to where it needs to be. It's nothing humongous. She's trying to raise $5,000, and she needs your help. Go to RadioPower.org, and all the information for how to make a donation is right there for you. And, you know, it's not just me. She puts forward an entire lineup of dedicated, progressive, liberal talk. So, if you've got a few bucks, forego a trip to see the Da Vinci Code, for instance. Believe me, forego it. Bunch of hooey. A few bucks. Slide a few bucks toward Shelby and help her continue the good work of. Now, there's just one thing more about this little dust up in the Senate today. And there is just one other thing with regard to the Senate dust-up today, and that is something I would like to point out to you, a remedy to all this foolishness. Imagine for a minute, if you will, that regardless of all of this hateful, hate-filled, right-wing, Republican stench about so-called gay marriage. Imagine for a moment that if one religion, one faith, came forward and said that they sanction such marriage and that they were going to perform such marriage. Imagine, wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't it be fun to watch the Heritage Foundation and Liberty Lobby and all of those weird little right-wing religion industry groups, what position would they take if a particular faith came forward and said that their constitutional rights were being damaged, their First Amendment rights, you know, freedom of religion, not freedom from religion, freedom of religion, that that was being damaged by all this this business about no gay marriage? After all, if a religion wants to marry men to men or women to women, as the church did, imagine the hissy that they would have. There's your answer to it, and that's and it's something that the thing nuts dare never even. Horrifying to them to behold. Now, something that was covered in Bruce Birch's Top of the Hour news that I would like to submit for your approval. This little story about Al Gore backing out of a talk at UC Berkeley. You have to read the story carefully, or it can come off looking looking a little strange. Copy I have says former Vice President Al Gore is the latest big name Democrat to cancel a planned appearance at the University of California, Berkeley, after local members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees threatened to picket. Because you see, AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, represents janitors, landscapers, and cafeteria workers at UCal Berkeley. And they have an ongoing labor dispute with the university. If you stand in support of organized labor, you should be proud of Al Gore for this, and you should juxtapose this. I don't know. How about with the Democratic so-called frontrunner, Hillary Clinton? Al Gore will not go to UCal Berkeley. Al Gore will not insult the janitors and the landscapers and the cafeteria workers who work there. He will not insult them by treading on that campus while the university has not done right by its workers. What we talked a couple of nights ago about whether or not Al Gore might be making amends to liberals, and I think he is, and I think this is another way he does it. Now, Howard Dean also has refused to speak there, as has California State Senator Liz Figueroa. Assembly Speaker Fabian Nunez, Democrat from Los Angeles, also canceled a planned speech at the university's commencement convocation last week because of the pickets. Because, you see, the University of California, Berkeley, one of the most prestigious state schools in the entire United States, right up there with Michigan, Virginia, University of North Carolina, state schools, my beloved West Virginia University. This highly prestigious school pays dirt wages to the people who clean up after professors, researchers, and God knows, students. They pay dirt wages to the janitors, to the cooks, the dishwashers, the people who cut the grass and run the hedge clippers and grasp gas-powered trimmers hours on end until when they set the thing down at the end of the day, they literally cannot grasp the steering wheel because of the vibrations. UCal Berkeley, and of course, you know, who heads the California government? Yeah, Arnold. They pay dirt wages for these folks. And I want to register the fact that I am proud of Al Gore for standing with working people. What was step nine that we checked into a couple of nights ago to make amends? Yeah, this is a making of amends. This is Al Gore showing us that he is prepared to lead. I know some of you don't like Al. My God, compare Al Gore's actions with regard to the University of California at Berkeley. Compare that to Hillary Clinton's actions with regard to the transit workers in New York City. On a cold winter day when the transit workers walked out because they were being mistreated by the city of New York, Hillary Clinton couldn't be found. That liberal, yeah, right, that liberal couldn't be found standing with people who work every day and work damned hard for a living. Compare and contrast. Hillary? Well, there were photographs of Hillary standing at the multi-billion dollar construction site and ribbon cutting for Goldman Sachs. But there weren't any photographs of Hillary standing on a picket line with working men and women. Al Gore showed us that he has more class than to cross a picket. Al Gore showed us that he has made amends. Al Gore showed us that he is fit to lead. I do. I submit that for your discussion. If you'd like to engage in it, feel free. 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the number 4, head on. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hi, my name is Aaron, and I'm a survivor of mannequinism. Mannequinism is basically when you turn into a hard plastic shell. They say it's from not being politically active. For me, it started when I didn't register to vote, and then I stopped volunteering, and before I knew it, I wasn't doing anything. And that's when I found the first sign. A small, discolored hard patch of plastic on my right shoulder. I thought it would go away on its own, but it didn't. It kept spreading. And when I could no longer conceal it with a t-shirt, I knew I had to see the doctor. He said I had this early stage of mannequinism and that my only hope was to get involved, even if it was something simple. So I began reading the newspaper and instantly got feeling back in my arm. I guess you could say I'm living proof you can fight mannequinism.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Dog attacks and dog bites come in all sizes. Think your dog doesn't bite? Don't be so sure. Dog attacks are one of the nation's most commonly reported public health problems. Francia Smith, consumer advocate for the U.S. Postal Service.
With the summer heat and children out of school, the dog bite risk gets worse. But with a little care, dog owners can prevent most attacks and protect themselves too. from the serious legal, financial, and emotional consequences that often result. Over half the dog bite victims are children. Any dog can bite for the first time, even with the owner there. So whether you are a dog owner or not, please take the time to learn about dog safety. Visit USPS.com and type the words dog bite into the search box for the links you need. You'll be glad you did.
This message is provided as a public service by this station and the U.S. Postal Service.
Head on with Bob Kincaid.
Let's go back to the phones, and we are joined by Beauregard T. Clampett, I'm told, on line one.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Mr. Clampett, how are you, sir?
That's fine, sir. Y'all have had a ruckus on the airwaves this evening, Bob, and I just got to tell you where I fall down on the subject.
And fall down you do, I suppose.
So you catch on quick, I tell you. You're very quick, very quick. But I did want to just, because I kept hearing things like amnesty, and I had to tell you, Bob, if we have amnesty, we can't work them to death like we're doing. We can't pay them $3 an hour if we let them become citizens now, can we?
That whole 13th Amendment thing still a thorn in your side, isn't it?
We won't talk about that either, Bob. Now, we're working on repealing that sucker, but it's going to take a while.
Catch Bob Kincaid weeknights, 7 to 10 p.m., right here on the Head On Radio Network.
Good man underground.
Head on.
Of course, the lovely Agnes is the roles of the Heart of the Sun. And if you want to get in on the conversation, you're more than 774. Email comes in to Bob at headonradio.com. And I did just get a note. John tells me that. In fact, I just said a little bit, finding some religion of gay persons, writes and says, I saw where the Church of Satan does in fact sanction gay marriage. Read more. They don't fault anyone for what they believe or what their preferences are. Do what you want, providing you harm no one else while doing it. But it was rather interesting, John says. They raise a few eyebrows, though. But we're liberals and... Yeah, I'm thinking, I don't know. Look, that'd be interesting. The United, but, you know, the fact of the matter is the United Churches of Christ would be appropriate plaintiffs in such a lawsuit. Because they freely state that they do not discriminate against people based upon what goes on when the light goes off. Or stays on, for that matter. Somewhere down the road, somebody's going to figure this one out, and it's going to put the mouth breathing religion industry in a real bind. Well, they got freedom of religion, but not that kind of freedom of religion. Freedom of our religion. Oh, for heaven's sake! Now, is this the time to get into it? Why not? We'll start. Michael Hayden, I got to admit, I felt inclined to just avoid this story because it's such a, the Senate hearings today were just such a ugly little dog and pony show. Can we have, I'm just being cranky, okay? I'm cranky. Can we have a rule in the Senate that says when you come for the job interview, you don't bring the wife and kids? And I don't mean that just for the weirdo, fundy Republicans who bring their wives dressed in the upholstery from a late 50s Edsel. It's not just you, Mrs. Alito. It's not just you, Mrs. Roberts. Everybody. This is This is business. It takes away from the seriousness of the hearing, doesn't it? I frankly don't care, and there's no sexism involved in this. I don't care about your spouse or lack thereof. I'm a progressive. I'm a liberal. I don't think you've got to be married to have meaning in your life. And the presence of your wife or your husband sitting back there while you're answering questions put forward by a Senate panel to you. Nah, see, it doesn't impress me. It cheapens the proceedings. It does, doesn't it? If you went to a job interview tomorrow at Amalgamated Widget, or International Telesemiconducting Doohickey, you go to that interview and you bring the wife and kids and see if you go home with the job. Because I don't think you do. This is Soviet stuff.
I'd like to present lovely spouse and children for approval of Supreme Soviet.
And they all, yeah, little golf claps. Need a little golf clap? Yeah. Oh, look, she's lovely. I don't care. But, you know, it started the stupid little dog and pony show. I mean, can we at least have the appearance that this stupid little dog and pony show, whose outcome we already know, can we at least have the appearance that it really does matter? Can we at least have the appearance that this is serious business for the future of the country? That the bill, you know, that whether this guy who frequently tap dances, little Lester Maddox lookalike that he is, who frequently tap dances on the Constitution, can we at least pretend that the hearing is deserving of some dignity? Because all the dignitude goes down the drain when you bring the wife and the kids. And, you know, this is, but again, it's cowardly politics. Republicans like to do this because they think that those mean old liberals won't be so hard on them if there's a chance that the baby and the wife will sit there bawling and have to storm out of the room. Cowards. Chickens. Make me crazy. So we will talk about this Hayden business. It was interesting. It took them several hours to get around to the fact that the sucker had already committed perjury in front of Congress. But get around to it they did. Thank God for Ron Wyden from Oregon. Let's take a break. When we come back, your phone calls, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Workers and unions united for a strong grassroots state legislative campaign in Pennsylvania that elected a pro-working family Democrat in a heavily Republican district. Jim Deegan of the Pennsylvania AFL-CIO says the race has political significance beyond this contest.
The significance of that victory is that workers came together. Unions and union members came together, and unions came together there, and they put out an all-out campaign.
Deegan says this state legislative race that sent Andrew Denneman to the Pennsylvania State House is an indication of greater change to come in the state's U.S. Senate race.
We think it is. We think that union members and working families, they're looking for change, and Bob Casey represents that change. He supports working people on health care, on fair trade policies. He supports raising the minimum wage. And these are issues that aren't being talked about in Congress. And this is one way. This particular race shows that working people want these issues addressed. That's what we're going to be doing by sending Bob Casey to the U.S. Senate.
Is the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission in crisis? The American Federation of Government Employees, a union representing 600,000 workers in the federal government, thinks so and is launching a media campaign this week to inform Americans.
It's not a normal freeze. This breakdown here is to eliminate the agency.
That was Andrea Brooks, AFGE's National Vice President of Women's and Fair Practices, talking about a hiring freeze that has been in place at the agency since 2001. Since that time, the EEOC has lost 20% of its workforce, and the Bush administration is seeking to cut the agency's budget by $4 million. According to Brooks, the backlog of cases at the EEOC will grow to nearly 48,000 in 2007. AFGE members at the Department of Defense are especially concerned as the administration is implementing new work rules that will take away some of the on-the-job security they have with union representation.
They said in touting these new work rules, don't worry, you still have the right to go to EEOC. Well, they knew that EEOC was being dismantled from within.
Here is today's economic report. How much does home ownership help as an economic asset for families? According to the Economic Policy Institute, the top 1% own primary homes worth $1.9 trillion, with the bottom 90% of the country owning $11.8 trillion. But what about second homes? They are a far greater source of wealth for the top 1% at $1.1 trillion, and only $0.02 trillion for the bottom 90%.
You've been listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Was red and she was colorblind. All her friends, well, they've been tried for treason and crimes that never defined.
And straight to the phones. Kevin is joining us. Hey, Kevin, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing well. Yourself?
Oh, I'm not doing too bad at all, especially after May 9th. I'm doing pretty good. Really good.
Yeah, congratulations. This is our good friend Kevin Manus, who secured himself a seat, a spot on the general election in the West Virginia primary there in Raleigh County. My sincere congratulations, Kevin.
Well, thank you, and I just wanted to thank you, Head On Radio, and Agnes for producing and doing my radio ad for me. I got a lot.
Well, we had a lot of fun doing it.
Well, everywhere I went, I got a lot of compliments on the ad. And, of course, a lot of people was like, who is that woman that did that? And, of course, I told them, and they was like, man, she did a really great job. And I was like, well, yeah, she did. So, but like I said, I just wanted to call and say thank you all. And hopefully, you know, work with you all down the road for the general election.
Well, we look forward to it, Kevin. We certainly do, and I think one of the keys to your campaign was the fact that unlike some of the other stuff we saw around there, you ran a positive, upbeat campaign that talked about hope and talked about the potential to do better. And I think if you continue doing that, people will respond to it.
Yeah, I think people. I know personally myself, even before I got into politics, I went to several what they call meet the candidates, and even back then, when I would hear candidates trashing other candidates, it really turned me off. And I told myself back then, if I ever do get into politics, I'm not going to do that, because I know if I don't like it, other people don't like it. And I think, unfortunately, that that can backfire on you. So I'm going to keep a clean, upbeat campaign, and hopefully that'll carry me through November.
Well, I think there's a very real chance that it will, because there is a lot of negativity out there right now, and I think people are going to respond positively to you as long as you keep giving them something to hope for and to trust, as opposed to sending them into the ballot booth, into the voting booth, trying to figure out who they were going to vote against. You're giving people an opportunity for a change to vote for someone, Kevin, and I'm mighty proud of that.
Well, Bob, I've told a lot of people that, a lot of politicians get accused of giving a lot of lip service, and they try to tell people that they understand their situations, and I don't want to say that they don't, but I think most of the time it is lip service. And at least I know myself, I have experienced a lot of things in my life, and I know what a lot of West Virginians go through every day. I've lived it, I still live it due to my situation, and I think I'm living proof that if you try and you put your best foot forward, you can achieve just about anything you want to achieve.
And that's the kind of attitude out of our political leaders, Kevin. What did you get? Did you get a sense during the campaign of what was mattering most to voters?
Well, that's the sad thing. I really believe that. I think people are really concerned about right now the Social Security issue, and people are concerned, obviously because of the gas taxes. But it seems to be that there's a lot of people out there who you don't hear anything from them. You're not sure what their issues or concerns are, because they don't come to the candidates' forums. They don't call you or email you or let you know what their problems are. So it's hard to say, but I do know that, at least from my perspective, it's the tax problems in this state, and it's the Social Security and the cost of gas.
Did you get a sense for how much play what I describe as the phony division issues that people try to play out in politics? Did you get a sense for how much those mattered?
Actually, to be very honest, I didn't hear any of that very much. I mean, there was some. It wasn't. I mean, I ran 2 years ago too, and wasn't nearly as successful. And I heard a lot of those about those issues 2 years ago, but I really didn't this time. But I have a feeling I've already been kind of warned that it's probably going to hit the, it's going to hit it probably when the campaign really starts kicking back off. And they can, if they want to talk about those issues, I'll talk to them about it. And I'm pretty much anything they throw at me, I'll discuss it.
Well, the name of this program's Head On, and that sounds like the way you're taking the approach to campaign. Kevin, let me ask you, do you have a website up?
Yeah, I do. It's www.kevinmanus, Manus is MAYNUS.com.
KevinManus.com, and you've got your positions there. And
yeah, I have my issues that I was working on and going to be working on. I have all my endorsements and some of my biography and just some basic general information about me what I've done pretty much over the last nine years or so. And so I believe, and there's a way of, if anybody gets on there and they want to contact me, there is a link on there, and you can email me or drop me a line or call me for that matter.
Well, you know, accessibility is very important, especially, you know, I think one of the big jobs you're going to have, and perhaps a lot of, I don't know how it was in other states' primaries as they come and they go, but voter turnout was paltry, to say the best, Kevin.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts on how to
23%.
Do you have any thoughts on how to motivate people to get out?
Well, you know, all I can say to the people, there's a lot of people out here who make the common, they always say, well, politics isn't my cup of tea, or they say, well, it doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. You know, a lot of the programs, a lot of the services that people get in this state right now, you wouldn't have them if it wasn't for the legislature. And if you elect the wrong people, I can assure you, you're not going to have those services, because they are cutting services left and right. I just read an email today that was forwarded to me that President Bush is going to be mandatory certain individuals who's on Medicaid to go be on, I'm not exactly sure what it's going to be called, but basically they have to be on some type of a approval program that if they don't follow it, they will still receive Medicaid services, but it's going to be on a very, very limited basis. And, for example, say with somebody who has diabetes, if they don't follow the plan that their doctor, well, I don't even think the email said who was going to be setting the plan up. I'm assuming it would be the physician, but stranger things have happened in government.
Oh, yeah.
But if they do not follow their plan, and that means if they say you need to lose X amount of weight, you need to do this, you need to do that, you're going to have your Medicaid benefits, or at least probably 95% of your Medicaid benefits cut. And that's the kind of stuff that, yes, we need to make sure that government, that we do have good government, and that there isn't waste going on. But you also, you know, to kick somebody off of Medicaid who's a diabetic, who needs their insulin, their medication, and their testing supplies and that type of thing, it's just outrageous.
Well, I mean, it's outrageous. And beyond that, it's just plain old-fashioned, mean-spirited, Kevin.
It is.
And I think, you know, what you're talking about is a government that is responsive to people's needs, and a government that takes into account, how should I put it, that we are all deserving of that good government, not just the people who have paid lobbyists or the people who have $100,000 checks that they can write.
Absolutely. I mean, as a representative, as a candidate, you know, it's my job to represent everyone. I don't care if you're male or female. I don't care what color you are, what nationality you are. If you live in this district and you live in this state, it is my job, and it is the other elected officials' job, to make sure that everyone has the same rights and opportunities as anyone else.
Let me ask you, Kevin, as far as the legislature is concerned, you know, there's a gazillion committees. Should you win and get to go down to Charleston to represent the district, do you have your hopes for any particular committees? Are there any places that you would particularly like to turn your talents?
I would like to be the speaker, but that's a little joke there. But there's about three or four. You know, obviously my background is in social services. So I would like to be on House Government Org or Health and Human Resources, but I also have a master's degree in education, too. So I would like to be, you know, in education as well. But, just to make it plain and simple, I want to be on any committee that I believe that will benefit and help the citizens of this state in the best way I possibly can. And, of course, I'd also like to be on the Finance Committee as well. For the past 9 years, I've done a lot of legislative advocacy, and one of the things you always hear down there is, we don't have any money, but, at least if I was on the Finance Committee, I think I would be able to point out to them in several cases where they're wasting money, and maybe we could find it that way.
Well, speaking of finances, Kevin, are you averse to individual donations? Because you don't get you got to have money to do this.
I take, if there's anyone out there who would like to contribute to my campaign, I would greatly appreciate it. According to laws, the contribution cannot be anything over $1,000. If it's a married couple, spouse, each of them can do $1,000. But,
right.
I do take contributions from folks.
Is there a mailing address on your website?
Yes, there is. It's under my contact. My contacts, but I can tell you right now, it's Kevin Maness, Post Office Box 5333, Beckley, West Virginia 25801.
Wonderful. Well, Kevin, we certainly wish you the best. Agnes and I both do. She had a lot of fun, and we put a lot of skull sweat into trying to give voice to the optimism that you had described when we talked about the message that you wanted to get across. I sincerely hope that you can find a way. They say the campaign really doesn't kick off until Labor Day, but I hope you can find a way to keep your name out there for these next several months so that you can inspire people to go to the polls. And if you can keep it as positive as you have, I think you can do that. And if you do that, I think you will win.
Well, I think right now I can tell you, Bob, that I have already about six things scheduled this month and in the first part of June. They're non-political events, but I plan to attend them and be there, to shake hands and then, keep my name out there, keep my face out there. And obviously, even though they're not political events, if anyone sees me there or has any questions, hey, I'll be more than happy to try to answer anybody's question to the best of my ability. My answers may not always suit everyone, but I'll promise you that I will respond, because I believe it's the duty of any candidate who's running for any office, if they're afraid to answer questions or deal with the public, then they're in the wrong business.
Absolute truth. Kevin, thank you very kindly for dropping making a phone call, and keep us apprised on the progress of the campaign, will you please?
I sure will. Thanks a lot, Bob, and again, thanks to Agnes.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. Bye.
Bye now. That's our good friend Kevin Maness on the ballot for the November general election. Candidate for the House of Delegates district there in Beckley, West Virginia. His website, kevinmaness.com. KevinMaynus. And look, you may not be in West Virginia, but if you believe in supporting, if you believe in supporting some of the ideas that we talk about here, that is that change begins. You've heard me say it before. You don't build pyramids from the top down. You build them from the base up. Kevin, among others, working very hard to create a hopeful politics. I'm sorry, I'm not very good at the televangelist money thing. But if you do have a couple of bucks laying around, it's good. Even running for House of Delegates in West Virginia takes money, and it's going to take Kevin some money. So if you can spare a fin or a 10 spot, put one Kevin's way, because it will go to work for the kind of things that in many ways you and concerns for and belief in. Let's take a quick break. It's about 10 minutes before the hour. When we come back, a little bit more of Michael Hayden. And, you know, like I said, Tucker is apparently now guilty of perjury, but, you know, why should that matter to... Phone number, if you want to jump into the program, is 877-4-HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Haven't changed, had much to say, but man, I still think them cats are crazy. They were asking if you were around, how you was, where you could be found. I told them you were living downtown, driving all the old men crazy.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs? Sure about that? Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh?
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Hello, this is Guy James, host of The Guy James Show. If you like factual, hard-hitting, liberal radio, yes, I said liberal, then I believe you'll like our show. We're a proud member of the Head-On Radio Network, heard Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time at theguyjamesshow.com. You heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Minutes or so before the hour, Michael Hayden. Daggummit, Bob Kincaid, you know that. Why did I say Michael Hayden was a perjurer? Well, because he is. Way back when, and this was brought to light by Senator Ron Wyden, a Democrat from Oregon. When he finally got a shot at Hayden today, he pointed something out. He noted, back in 2001, Hayden was, quote, told by the president's lawyers that you had authority to listen to Americans' phone calls. Then, in 2002, Hayden went before a joint congressional committee investigating September 11th. And at that point in time, when he testified, the NSA had already been authorized to conduct electronic surveillance of folks in the U.S. without getting warrants from the federal from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court. Yeah. Now, meanwhile, he told Congress. Well, never mind. But at any rate, this is what he said. This is what Senator Wyden said to Hayden. Quote, on the wiretapping program in 2001, you were told by the president's lawyers that you had authority to listen to Americans' phone calls. But a year later in 2002, you testified that you had no authority to listen to Americans' phone calls in the United States unless you had enough evidence for a warrant. But you have since admitted you were wiretapping Americans. Now, this is Hayden's response. Pretend you're in the jury box. How would you judge a witness who talks like this? Well, let me talk a little bit about the incidents that you brought up. The first one, I believe, is testimony in front of the combined HPSCI and SSCI, the Joint Inquiry Commission on the Attacks of 9/11. And in my prepared remarks, I was trying to be very careful because we were talking not in closed session in front of the whole committee, but in front of the whole committee in totally open session. I believe, and I haven't looked at all those remarks for a couple of months now, I believe I began them by saying that I had been forthcoming in closed sessions with the committee. Now, you may quibble that I've been forthcoming in closed sessions with some of my information with the leadership of the committee or with the entire committee, but the language of the statute you referred to earlier does allow for limited briefings in certain circumstances, and I know there will probably be questions on what those legitimate circumstances. Okay, you got all that? All he was asked, you've since admitted you were wiretapping Americans? That's the question. That's it. You since admitted you were wiretapping Americans? There's three paragraphs here.
Well, it depends on whether or not I have a recollection of a remembrance of mommy that the ketchup is a vegetable.
Oh. One simple question, one really... Oh, wait, you know, there's more. If anyone in the U.S. government should be empathetic to the dilemma of someone in the position I was in, it should be members of this committee with classified knowledge floating around their left and right lobes every time they go out to make a public statement. In other words, he's saying, shut the hell up. Make it really hard on you. Stand? Yeah, there's more where that came from. Let's take a break. Time for the top of the hour news when we come back. Yeah, Michael Hayden, why not? We need to at least... 877-443-2366. Head on. Network we like to call The Horn. Get on The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on Radio News. I'm Bruce Birch. Not to be outdone by a number of states showing their institutional discrimination, a U.S. Senate committee approved a constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage after a shouting match that ended when one Democrat walked out and the Republican chairman bade him good riddance. U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Arlen Specter, Republican of Pennsylvania, shouted at Senator Russ Feingold, quote, "I don't need to be lectured by you. You are no more a protector of the Constitution than am I," end quote. Specter, Republican from Pennsylvania, shouted this at Feingold after Feingold declared his opposition to the amendment, his affinity for the Constitution, and his intention to leave the meeting. Not to be outdone by Feingold, Specter told him, quote, "If you want to leave, good riddance," end quote. Feingold then replied with, quote, "I've enjoyed your lecture too, Mr. Chairman. See ya," end quote. A former Republican National Committee official was sentenced Wednesday to 10 months in prison for his role in the jamming of New Hampshire Democrats' telephones on Election Day 2002. Prosecutors said James Tobin helped arrange more than 800 hang-up calls that jammed get-out-the-vote phone lines set up by State Democratic Party and the Manchester Firefighters Union for about an hour. Republican John Sununu defeated then-Governor Gene Shaheen for the Senate that day in what had been considered a cliffhanger. Republican Congressman James Sensenbrenner, who pushed a tough border security bill through the House last December, accused George Bush on Wednesday of abandoning the legislation after asking for many of its provisions. Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin, angrily told reporters in a conference call, quote, "He basically turned his back on provisions of the House-passed bill, a lot of which we were requested to put in the bill by the White House," end quote. This lends credibility to speculation that the immigration issue and huge demonstrations were in large part manufactured by the administration to distract from other issues where Bush is taking hits. A new congressional report indicates phone companies may be liable over call records affected by the illegal NSA domestic spying. In the report, the Congressional Research Service identified the various statutes that would apply to the matter, concluding that these laws may, quote, "expose the telephone companies to some civil remedies or criminal sanctions," end quote. The report also noted, quote, "a request not founded upon a statutory scheme would appear to lack a means of compelling production of the information requested," end quote. Congressman John Conyers, who released the report, said, quote, "Given this analysis, it is clear that we as a Congress need to step up and investigate these very serious charges," end quote. You're listening to News from the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Sure, you got a cool motorcycle. You're a regular hero. Have a beer, and you'll go from hero to zero. Skip the alcohol. Ride straight. A message from this station and the AMA. On the web at amadirectlink.com.
Richard Armitage, former aide to former Secretary of State Colin Powell, is now apparently a target in the CIA leak investigation. Steve Clemens, editor of the popular foreign relations blog The Washington Note, revealed Thursday that former NSA chief Bobby Ray Inman has repeatedly said former Undersecretary of State Richard Armitage is a target of the investigation into the outing of covert CIA officer Valerie Plame Wilson. While saying he has no knowledge of the veracity of Inman's claim, Clemens notes that the nation's top spy chief might be privy to insider information. The BBC is now reporting that Iran's capability to create a nuclear weapon is in great doubt due to the amount of enriched nuclear material they presently have. As was reported here on the Head-On Radio Network several weeks ago, the BBC now concurs with the assessment that was brought forth by Hans Blix and by Scott Ritter that Iran's natural uranium is not capable of being made into nuclear material anytime soon because it also contains molybdenum, and that material must be removed to enrich the uranium. The material Iran used to enrich was from China and was a limited amount that was acquired before China signed onto the Non-Proliferation Treaty. 17 years after it was withdrawn from U.S. markets, a synthetic version of the active ingredient in marijuana is going back on sale as a prescription treatment for the vomiting and the nausea that often accompanies chemotherapy, its manufacturer said Thursday. Valeant Pharmaceuticals International hopes to begin selling Sisamet in the next 2 to 3 weeks, company president Wes Wheeler said. Former Vice President Al Gore canceled a planned appearance at University of California, Berkeley, after local members of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees threatened to picket. Gore was to speak Tuesday evening on the emerging threat of global warming at a China-U.S. climate change forum co-sponsored by Peking University and University of California, Berkeley. The rest of the program, slated for Tuesday and Wednesday, continued as scheduled. The workers are protesting what they describe as poverty wages and a UC proposal requiring employees to pay up to 8% of their salary toward their pensions. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Well, I don't know where you are. The darkness has almost fallen across the face of the Deep South. There are, of course, many who would say that darkness fell across the face of the Deep South, 200-300 years ago, but that's not. I'm Bob, this is Head On, and you heard the phone number there, as delivered by our most excellent announcer, Brian Reznor. Use it if you want to. Otherwise, I'm going to sit here and remember, Michael Hayden, okay? Very simple question. You have since admitted you were wiretapping Americans. That's it. That's it. Anyone, how snide is this? This is the epitome of just sleazy snideness. If anyone in the U.S. government, little Lester Maddox, if anyone in the U.S. government should be empathetic to the dilemma of someone in the position I was in, it should be members of this committee who have classified knowledge floating around their left and right lobes every time they go out to make a public statement. You cannot avoid in your responsibilities talking about Iran or talking about Iraq or talking about terrorist surveillance, but you have classified knowledge, and your challenge and your responsibility is to give your audience that at that moment the fullest, most complete, most honest rendition you can give them, knowing that you are prevented by law from telling them everything you know. Oh, what a bastard. This is the transcript of what he said today. He took a question about whether or not he lied like a rug in front of the Congress and turned it into a damn lecture of senators who theoretically have classified knowledge. And of course, that's part of the game now, right? Isn't it? Well, that's the new focus. I mean, it was said point blank today that filthy old, hateful, mendacious Pat Roberts of Kansas. Blech. Maybe his mother loves him or his family or something. What? Well, that's a hell of a book title. What's the matter with Kansas? What's the matter indeed with it? He said, yeah, we have stopped attacks. I mean, we can't tell you about the attacks we've stopped, but we stopped the attacks. Liar. And later on CNN, fruit of Ted Koppel's loins, Andrea, he responded and reported on the testimony. Took her into the early afternoon before she finally got around to mentioning, and I quote,
it's actually gotten quite heated, questioning whether or not General Hayden himself had perhaps even misled deliberately the American people when he came before Congress, when he appeared at various public events around town. And there were some moments in which you could feel the tension in the room. By God, it was just like American Idol.
Now, earlier this evening, we had Arlen Specter lecturing Russ Feingold, telling Russ Feingold that he was, quote, no more a defender of the, no more a protector of the Constitution than I am. All of an admission. And here is Michael Hayden. My God, if this was a trial, if there was a prosecutor that was dealing with an answer like this, you'd look at the judge and you'd say, Your Honor, I object. The witness is being non-responsive. Would you tell him to answer the damn question? Now, you may quibble that I've been forthcoming in closed sessions with some of my information. Quibble? That little pissant looked at a senator of the United States and accused Ron Wyden of quibbling. You got that? 10 years ago, honest to God, 10 years ago, saying, I did not have sex with that woman, Miss Lewinsky, was sufficient grounds to spend $70 million with the Republicans trying to get inside Bill Clinton's pants. And impeaching him, and trying him in the Senate, and in the short span of one sweet little decade, as of May the 18th, 2006, lying. Outright lying to Congress becomes, in the words of four-star general, military academy grad honor code following Michael freaking Hayden, quibbling. Lying to Congress. Lying to Congress is quibbling. How many times did I have to hear about how Bill Clinton said, well, that depends on what the definition of is. How many times? Over. And good, godly, upstanding, God-fearing, America-loving Republicans screaming that the rule of law was in jeopardy. Because protein stains on a blue dress and this man, the living embodiment of our Agent Fred, little gnome, this little geek with four stars on his shoulders, and he, I mean, come on, look at him. And a skinhead to boot. What is it with the shaved heads? I mean, is that something G. Gordon Liddy started, or does it go back to Eisenhower, or what? He's so uncomfortable with his own masculinity that he has to shave the rest of his head so that everybody won't know he's bald in the first place? Jesus criminy! It's kind of a little physical embodiment of his basic dishonesty, isn't it? Sorry to the follicularly challenged, my apologies. But it hasn't made me... shut up, Bob. I believe I began those remarks by saying that I have been forthcoming in closed sessions with the committee. What kind of a damned excuse is that? I've been forthcoming in a closed session, so now I'm sitting here in public and I'm going to lie my ass off to you? Welcome to the twisted little world of the United States of America in the year 2006. Oh, we heard about what a brilliant man he is. Oh, we heard, and you know, he brought his wife and kids, like I mentioned. Yes, Lord, yes, he's got the wife and kids back there, and everybody's just so proud to be there watching him commit perjury! Well, I guess it's actually a... Now, you may quibble that I've been forthcoming in closed sessions with some of my information with the leadership of the committee or with the entire committee. I'm getting tired of this notion that there is a strange little cabal in this country, and they are the only people who are entitled to know what the hell is really going on. My senator from West Virginia, Jay Rockefeller, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Intelligence Committee, got briefed on the secret spying program, the secret squirrel program, whatever the hell its real name is, Echelon, I don't know. And they swore him to secrecy, made him give the lodge high sign, the secret handshake, and the double secret wink. And from what I'm able to tell, we're apparently told him that, you know, if he spilled the beans, they'd have to kill him. The guy wrote a letter, Senator Rockefeller wrote a letter objecting to this program and objecting to the level of information he had not been given. He couldn't even contact or consult with legal counsel on this. It was so secret. And he handwrote the letter because he didn't dare even use so much as a typewriter where, you know, some Maxwell Smart type, you know, I don't know, MQ, could possibly use the roller ball of a typewriter or the ribbon out of it and find out which keys it hammered where, and next thing you know, they're reading the letter. Had to handwrite the damn thing and stick it in a safe. I mean, these are the actions of some guy who expects to be taken out on the lake and gone fishing like Fredo. And Michael Hayden has the nerve to sit there and tell Ron Wyden of Oregon to shut the hell up and to quit quibbling over whether or not he has just committed a felony? God Almighty, where? Help me. What has this country come to? And this guy is going to be, and we know, it's a foregone conclusion. I mean, it's all dummied up. It's a dog and pony show. It's you know, 25 cents this way to the egress. He's going to become the number one spy in America. Because the Republicans in Congress that will vote on his nomination love their political party more than they love their country. And that should make you a little something less than inspired. When we come back, your phone calls, 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Get on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
telephone ring. Somebody said, baby, what you doing? I've been wondering where you've been. Now and then I think about you and me.
Asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
Every 3 minutes, another woman gets the news that she has breast cancer. And here are some of the first words she hears. HER2-new oncogene, aromatase inhibitor, ductal carcinoma in situ. What do these words mean? How are you going to decide what to do if you can't even say what you have? Please listen to me, Marvin Hamlisch. As soon as you get your diagnosis, go to breastcancer.org. It's a special place on the internet where you can learn how to say all those breast cancer words and find out what they mean. At breastcancer.org, you can learn more about your particular kind of cancer and your treatment options. Prepare a list of questions for your next doctor's visit and get all kinds of other useful information to guide you and your family through this. Breastcancer.org, the first place to go the minute you find out you have breast cancer.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a... Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Well, I got a pocket reputation, cause I like to get low down. All you mothers better lock up your daughters, cause the boogeyman's in town. They call me the boogeyman. Nobody can do it like I can.
Welcome back, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's go straight to the phones. Wayne is joining us. Hey, Wayne, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm okay.
Well, everything seems to have gone well.
I hope so.
Well, I think so. Of course, that's one man's opinion. you guys got me addicted to this message board, I got to say that. It's good.
Oh, the chat room?
I'm getting faster at typing, you know. My spelling still sucks, but what the hell can I say?
Well, as long as people can, you know, sort of dope it out and figure out what you meant.
I think they know what I'm saying, you know. But listen, I wanted to get back to earlier. I mean, you kind of apologize for starting the show off slow, talking about the Kuno decision. Well, part of the Kuno decision. I mean, that's not over yet. You know that?
No, not entirely.
Right. But I mean, you know, like. I want everybody to think about what Roberts and the Supreme Court did. I mean, the Supreme Court just said, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the American taxpayers in their own state have no standing in this case.
Yeah, that means you can't file the suit.
Exactly. That means that you have no decision or no input into how your tax dollars are spent. Isn't that what he said?
Yeah, and it's particularly ironic that this arises out of the state of Ohio, Wayne, because, you know, what you're going to get is that the seedy little lecture from the bench about how your recourse as a taxpayer is to vote people into office who will engage in policy that you approve of and the majority rules. You know, this is Ohio. This is Ohio where they threw out 150,000 votes, and John Kerry had already said, I quit.
Yeah, I know. Which I'm still upset about that. But I want to get back to this thing here. I mean, if what John Roberts said is right, then I want him to institute something and send back my tax money. I mean, if I don't have a say, what the hell do you need my money for?
Well, there's a hell of a lot of truth in that. But again, the thing that makes my skin crawl out of this, Wayne, it wasn't just John Roberts. The sickest part of this whole thing, it's a unanimous decision.
Yes, it was. That's exactly right. And, well, it's one of the more wrong unanimous decisions that I've ever seen. And this guy, I wrote it on the message board. This guy, Greg LeRoy, has a organization called Good Jobs First. I can't tell you the website. It's probably www.goodjobsfirst.com.org or something. But Google it, and you'll see what these people are all about. And they have made some very, very great strides in negotiating with developers. I mean, they have organized people in more urban areas where Walmart wants to come into the center of town. And these people stop them, and they tell Walmart or, you know, various other corporate entities that, look, we'll help you come in here if you guarantee that all of your jobs will pay a minimum of $8 an hour, offer affordable health insurance, and have a retirement plan. And they win a lot of these things. I mean, it's a very, very good organization. I know Greg LeRoy. I've met Greg LeRoy personally. I've been to his seminars, and he's a very, very interesting man. And his organization is full of really dedicated, wonderful, liberal, progressive, democratic people, and it's worthy of everybody to take a look at his website and find out
we're trying to get him on the show, and it is, in fact, Wayne, it's goodjobsfirst.org.
.org, okay. I knew it was dot somebody, buddy. They're really a wonderful organization, and they have unified so many, like, little splinter organizations that, you know, everybody, there are so many organizations that are trying to do things, and they end up kind of working against each other. And this guy has brought them all together to work for a common cause, and they are making a difference. And it's an excellent example for anybody, any progressive group that wants to, you know, really try to affect change. And, I recommend it highly. So that's my little piece for tonight, buddy.
Yeah, and the book, and it's a heck of a book, too, The Great American Job Scam.
The Great American Job Scam. I mean, he points out in the first few chapters, the United States spends $50 billion a year in job creations that don't really do anything except, you know, benefit corporations. And what, you know, I learned this years ago in an economic development seminar. When a company says they're going to come somewhere, they already know where they're going to go. They already know it. And then it's, okay, let's include the bordering states, let them fight it out, and the place that we were going to go in the beginning, we will get a better deal than we ever dreamed of. And it's happened time and time again.
Well, you know what's amazing out of this, and you're right, it is just a piece of the decision, but what's amazing out of this, in the reason they were able to come up with this idea that the plaintiffs didn't have standing to sue is that before making that ruling, Wayne, they ruled that the plaintiffs could not show that they had been harmed.
How did they come to that conclusion?
When you 384 school personnel fired.
When your tax base is cut, when you can no longer afford to fund your schools or the employees, the taxpayers haven't been harmed. How did they come up with that conclusion? Because
I don't know.
Harmed them.
That's why I keep coming back and saying, when you get right down to it, there's no such thing as a liberal Supreme Court justice.
No, but they've certainly proven that, haven't they?
Yeah, they're as conservative as army ants.
Right. But that's what's wrong with our whole system. These people are so far removed from ordinary working people, they can't even comprehend what it is to try to struggle to make a living. You know, I mean, what's a Supreme Court justice make?
Yeah, a couple of hundred grand.
Grand a year?
Yeah.
And what do they work? A couple, 3 months?
I know the one term starts the first Monday in October. I mean, the first day on the job, well.
Yeah, it's up, hell, I'd like to have a job. I'm going to talk to my boss about that.
Yeah, hey, boss, I don't want to come to work till the first Monday in October, okay?
Right, and then I want off for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Good work if you can get it, man.
Yeah, it certainly is, pal. It certainly is. So,
I'm going to go and read this opinion, and it's going to hurt my head to do it.
Okay, I saw, well, did I send you that email?
No.
Okay, I don't know if I still have it. But, Good Jobs First, put out an email and a summary of the decision and stuff like that. I don't know if I still have it. I thought I might have sent it to you, but I guess I didn't.
Well, I want to read the opinion itself, because this is authored, we sat there through the confirmation process, Wayne, and we were told what a daggum Solon John Roberts was.
Right.
That, you might disagree with him, but boy, he sure is a show enough genius.
Yeah.
Well, I've got the decision up in front of me now, and I'm going to read it after the show's over, and there'll probably be some screaming and, headbutting of the sheetrock.
Okay, well, try to calm down before tomorrow evening and explain it to us. Explain it to us.
I will.
Bob.
Yeah, well, okay. I might be able to do that.
Well, you got the kind of mind that cipher through all that stuff. I just
I'll put it through a few gazettas, too, while I'm at it.
There you go. There you go. I mean, I'd read it and go, what the hell did they say? So I know what the outcome means. Go away. Leave us alone. We'll decide what's good for you. That's what they said. So, anyway, pal, I'm out of here.
All right. Thanks, Wayne.
All right. Talk to you later.
Later. Have a good evening.
Same to you.
And I will. I promise. I really will. I've got this. I'm going to read it. If you go to goodjobsfirst.org and you go to the link Supremes Rule Narrowly on Kuno, at the bottom there's a link to the Supreme Court decision. You read it too. Let's talk about it a little bit tomorrow night, maybe. That'd be all right? We're a little overdue for a break, and how it is with Agnes. She's got that iron skillet. She can use even a great distance. We will take a brief break and come back. If there's a last thought, a final bee under your bonnet, a final burr under your saddle,
Mother doesn't go out,
as dear leader says, bring it on. Get on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
But every weekend through the door come words of wisdom from the world outside. If you want to know about the bishop and the
Citizens Commission on Human Rights brings you this word of caution about the side effects of psychiatric drugs on children. Glenn McIntosh's daughter reacted adversely to a drug she was given for depression.
Her personality changed, her behavior changed, and it became a downward spiral where she would start feeling urges to throw herself out a window.
Get the facts. Report psychiatric abuse. Visit www.cchr.org today. That's www.cchr.org.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye baby by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball. While gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Want to fight childhood asthma? Then fight it with a scrub brush and a hot soapy towel. Even in the neatest and tidiest homes, if there's so much as a crumb to eat or a drop to drink, household pests like bugs and mice will do all that they can to get it. Creepy crawlies like bugs and mice are unpleasant enough as it is, but they're more than just a nuisance for kids with asthma because they can actually trigger an asthma attack. So, give them a whole lot of nothing. Sweep up crumbs, wipe down tables, scrub dishes before they pile up in the sink, and store leftovers in plastic bags or bowls. Don't leave them so much as one tidbit or nibble, and you can stop a childhood asthma attack before it starts. Discover other simple ways to prevent an asthma attack. Call 1-866-NO-ATTACKS or visit noattacks.org, because no child should feel like a fish out of water. A public service message brought to you by the U.S. EPA, the Ad Council, and this station.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Now, I want to share something with you before we wind down too much tonight. Going back to the phony immigration debate, I want you to hear why, part of why at least, I contend that this is just another racist bugaboo. Or a knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, among other people, religion industry right. And a desperate attempt by Congress, especially, you know, the Senate's not going along with it. This is, keep narrowing the focus, narrow the focus, tighten the laser beam, tighten it up until it gets down and it gets scorching, and you can point it and you can show who this is designed to benefit. The House of Representatives. It's the Republicans in the House of Representatives. It's the uber-conservative Republicans in they're trying to motivate their base and split progressives and split liberals and even split Democrats in general with the god-awful phony issue. Now, yesterday, one of my favorite radio personalities, Falafel Boy, yes, the man who offered to assault a woman with a piece of fried Middle Eastern appetizer food, Bill O'Reilly. Bill let it all hang out. And he was talking about a mugging in New York City. And God knows those are rare. He was talking about a mugging in New York City of his makeup artist. I want you to hear for yourself. I'm not going to just tell you. No, don't take my word for it. Hear it, unedited, coming right out of the filthy gobhole of Bill O'Reilly. Hit it, please, Agnes.
You know, this immigration thing is very interesting because it points out a lot of things, bigger issues that y'all should be aware of. You know, Mexico doesn't care about us. Mexico doesn't care about the United States. And, you know, we have to be friends with them. I mean, we just can't be enemies with them. But we're dealing with a country that is, you know, is so corrupt and so out of control that, we have to deal with them on a certain level. But we certainly can't let their corruption infect us. And it has, particularly with the drug trafficking. You know, when you have the volume of narcotics, millions of tons of narcotics coming across the southern border. If I'm the president of the United States, that alone makes me put the guard on the border and not 6,000 guard. I would have 30, 40,000 down there. Because the damage that narcotics do to the fabric of society, my makeup artist for the TV side, I don't need makeup for radio, but some people say, at least
yeah, it would help.
Yeah, thank you. Was mugged the other day. Punched in the face in Greenwich Village. Now, who does
here
that?
It comes.
Drug addicts. Desperate for money. So this poor woman is walking down the street trying to support her little son. Some guy walks up to her, punches her in the face, and takes her purse. Now, 9 out of 10 of these guys are drug addicts. So she is a victim of the Mexican drug corruption. And all you have to do is multiply that by 10 million, and you see how all of this corruption in Mexico has infected our society. Yet you have these pinheads in Congress. See, they're not going to get mugged. President Bush isn't going to get mugged. All right?
Got that? Charming, isn't he? He takes a mugging in Greenwich Village and extrapolates it into, and this is the way that right-wing filth radio operates. One mugging in Greenwich Village gets extrapolated into, and these are his words, multiply that one mugging, multiply that by 10 million, and you see how all this corruption in Mexico has infected our society. He just said that the woman who cleans toilets is a drug smuggler and a drug trafficker. And that guy who shows up at Home Depot in Cobb County, Georgia, every morning at 5 a.m. hoping for a day laborer cash job is a drug smuggler and a narcotics trafficker. And while we're at it, could we please have a little bit of basic honesty in the vocabulary? Narcotics. To Bill, to Falafel Man, narcotics is pot, cocaine, meth. Can we have just a little bit of linguistic honesty here? Narcotics are the opioids. and the synthetic opioids. Codeine, your heroin, your opium, those are narcotics. Pot's not a narcotic. Cocaine is not a narcotic. But don't try telling that to Bill O'Reilly, because Rosita, who works in the back of the cafeteria 12 hours a day for $2 an hour, Rosita, she's a narcotic. Because they all are. They all are. In the land, you know, in thick, twisted little minds of the right wing. Just sickening. He has no proof of who did anything to this woman, or if the we don't even know if the incident's true. But assuming that it's true, he says, now who does that? Drug addicts desperate for money. So he doesn't know it's a drug addict, but now it's a drug addict. And he doesn't know it's a Mexican drug addict, but now it's a Mexican drug addict. And he doesn't know that it's a Mexican drug addict, but he knows it's the perpetrator is a Mexican. No, he doesn't. But therefore, all Mexicans are drug addicts. Do you see? How does this idiot, how does this poor, benighted fool manage to stay on the air? There's only one answer, and the answer is very sad, and that there is, and that is that there are a great number of people in this country who are every bit as damn dumb as he is. Holy cow. Let's go to the phones. Gerard is with us from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Good. I just wanted to kind of check in here just before the end of the program. Connecting with a couple of things that were talked about tonight, I wondered if you saw this thing about this NAFTA-style trade agreement that Bushy is trying to shove through with the country of Oman. Oman is apparently one of the cited by lots of different organizations around the world for being a leader in human trafficking. And the agreement, this NAFTA-style agreement, supposedly we have one already in place for some years now with Jordan. And there, it's referred to, there was an article in the New York Times about the situation in Jordan on May the 3rd. And the situation in Jordan, they refer to it as a guest worker program, and that they kind of rang some bells in my head, because we heard that from Dear Leader before, you know, in connection with the whole immigration thing. But I just wanted to read a couple sentences from the New York Times article. There are different. One is called the National Labor Committee. I don't know a lot about them, but they interviewed people who had been working in the garment industry in Jordan. One of the reasons, and I thought there was a connection where, you know, you might have a connection, because as I remember, not too long ago, there was a garment industry in the South until, you know, they started moving all the factories elsewhere in the south of the U.S., but they interviewed, the National Labor Committee interviewed people who apparently are no longer working in these garment factories in Jordan, but this is just an example of one person that they interviewed. She says, we used to start at 8 in the morning, and we'd work until midnight, 1 or 2 a.m., 7 days a week, said Nargis Akhtar, a 25-year-old Bangladeshi who, in a phone interview from Bangladesh, said she worked last year for the Paramount Garment Factory outside Amman. When we were in Bangladesh, they promised us we would receive $120 a month. But in 5 months I was there, I only got 1 month's salary, and that was just $50. And these people are reporting that they're paying $2,000 to $3,000 just to get contractors to take them to Jordan and Oman so they can get work. And I'm just wondering, you know, if that's the kind of guest worker program that your leader has in mind.
If he can get away with it, you're darn right it is, Gerard, because it's worth remembering that his original, I have no reason to believe that it's changed, his original guest worker program that he put out a couple of years ago included a provision that, among other things, if these so-called guest workers attempted to unionize, they could be peremptorily and immediately sent back to Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that was cited is that it was our trade policy, you know, from NAFTA, which lowered a lot of tariffs from these, of the goods coming in from these foreign companies. And so it made it easy, and a lot of it is covered in the New York Times article that, you know, I mean, it's all the major retailers here, Target, Walmart, everybody is buying these clothes and selling them here, which, you know, on its face,
yeah,
looks just...
Yeah, every so often we'll have a story, Gerard, about how a knitting factory in Bangladesh that was six stories tall just pancaked and fell in on itself. We've had two or three of those stories. We've had the story about Tom DeLay visiting the Marianas Islands and how the imported so-called guest workers there were given compulsory abortions, were kept in prison-like conditions, literally locked into their jobs, were prostituted out. The children of the workers were sent into prostitution. This is, I mean, you got to understand, that's the Republican dream world.
Yeah.
That's how they want it to be. They like that. I know it's sick and it's hard to contemplate, but it absolutely is. And this trade agreement with Oman, it's part of a larger package. One of the things that we started hearing a bunch of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth about when we found out that they were selling our ports to Dubai was that this whole thing could jeopardize the Dubai free trade agreement. There's a Dubai free trade agreement. There's an Oman free trade agreement. There are little tiny miniature free trade agreements scattered all through that Persian Gulf region. And it's for the sole purpose of destroying American workers and destroying organized labor. That's the purpose of it. And sure, Target takes advantage of it. God knows Walmart takes advantage of it. Kmart. You got to be a real label reader anymore to keep from participating in evil, you know?
Well, when people are out there and talking with their, you know, organized, you know, fellow Americans, I think we really need to start bringing back the boycotts of things. People have got to know that, you know, that sweater they're picking up in Walmart or whatever, they got to know, you know, what's gone into that and why it's there at that price. We all struggle, but that's, you know, we just got to get a conscience about it, I think.
I think you're absolutely right. Gerard, thank you for bringing that to our attention. We're sort of at the end of things, but it's always good to hear from you.
Okay. Thanks for everything you do, Bob. Take care.
Thank you, Gerard. Mm-hmm. And that does pretty much put paid to it for tonight. But the one thing that it says more than anything else is that you and I have a duty. If we're going to be serious about what we say, believe. We're going to be serious about the things that we hold to be important, that we hold to be self-evident, that we hold to be true, that we hold to be meaningful. If we really do hold fast to the concept that the American worker should have dignity, and we understand that these free trade agreements are nothing but pro forma designs to drive the American workforce and the American earning potential lower and lower and lower. It's the same race to the bottom that's represented in all the subsidy garbage that Greg LeRoy talks about. It's all one long race to the bottom. Ever been to a dog track? You know the little electric bunny that comes out that all the dogs chase? This is that, only the rabbit goes straight down, damn it. And most of America is chasing it in that direction. Gonna chase the bunny? Ain't chasing the bunny. Read the labels. Go to nosweatshop.org. Most of the stuff that the casual wear that you, your lovely wife, me, my lovely wife, your kids, whatever, wear on any given day is available there, made by American workers in American factories, organized labor. Most of the time they own part of the factory that they, and you know what? You can beat Walmart prices going there. Have a look. The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. Was announced by Brian Reznor. Our chief engineer is John Fox. Peter Godbold of Godbold Computers is our IT guy. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org streams all the programs of the Head On Radio Network and archives them as well. And of course, the show happens every single night, whether it be this show, Fourth Estate, All Things, Peppa Joe, all these shows happen every night because thousands of members of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights get up and go to work every day, and they work and they sweat to build the American dream. And by supporting the growth of this network, they're working to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.